Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. We have got a read today. I've been working on a bunch of stuff in the background today, but I realized I had let most of the day pass without doing a recording. And I wanted to read another one actually by Beautyon that he recommended me. And what was it titled? Got it right here. Why America Can't Regulate Bitcoin. And it's a really interesting discussion on just kind of the idea of Bitcoin as speech. But I'm having a hard time figuring out how to download I got another voice message yesterday or today sometime recently from McNeil. Thank you for that. I'm actually trying to figure out how to download these from the website so that I can actually use them in my recording, because I can add them. The one limitation of Anchor's editing is that it won't let me put their record, like you can't do two audio tracks at the same time. And so hopefully I get this figured out before I publish today's episode, and you'll get a little bonus at the end of the episode during the credits. I'm going to try to make a habit of putting some fun stuff back there. So with that, let's go ahead and jump into the reading. Again, this is by Beautyon. We just read a couple of pieces by Beautyon very recently. What was I reading by Beautyon here? Hit their GGs. Bitcoin and Software Reliability. Yeah, that one was Beautyon's. And I believe we hit another one by Beautyon, but I do not remember what it is off the top of my head. That one was really good, though. If you haven't listened to that one, the Bitcoin and Software Reliability, and it's all about how we should be treating Bitcoin as like nuclear software. And it's a really, really good one about just the concept of the level of assurance and the level of meticulous perfectionism that should go into engineering and designing the Bitcoin protocol. But with that, I will link to that in the show notes. But for now, let's go ahead and jump right in to this next one by Beautyon. Again, why America can't regulate Bitcoin. Hearings on Bitcoin and its derivatives are being held in the USA on a regular basis, and invariably, the expert witnesses fail to properly describe the actual processes going on. If they used the correct language and excluded all analogies, the only possible conclusion would be that America cannot regulate Bitcoin under its current legal system. The Constitution guarantees the inalienable rights of American citizens, and therefore, Bitcoin is a protected form of publishing. The only way Bitcoin can be made regulable is if the Constitution is changed. And that does not mean adding a new amendment. It means removing the First Amendment entirely. Inevitably, the anti-Bitcoin protagonists will face a robust and ultimately successful legal challenge that will remove the possibility of any sort of bit license or interference from the CTFC, FinCEN, or any other agency. It will also remove any possibility of interference at the state level. The consequence of adhering to the basic law of the United States will cause America to become the center of all Bitcoin business for the entire world. Let me explain why this is the case. Some say that Bitcoin is money. Others say that it is not money. It doesn't matter. What does matter are three things: that Bitcoin is, that the Bitcoin network does what it is meant to do completely reliably, and what the true nature of the Bitcoin network and the messages in it are. Bitcoin is a distributed ledger system maintained by a network of peers that monitors and regulates which entries are allocated to what Bitcoin addresses. This is done entirely by transmitting messages that are text between the computers in the network, known as nodes, where cryptographic procedures are executed on these messages in text to verify their authenticity and the identity of the sender and recipient of the message and their position in the public ledger. The messages sent between nodes in the Bitcoin network are human-readable and printable. There is no point in any Bitcoin transaction that Bitcoin ceases to be text. It is all text, all the time. Bitcoin can be printed out onto sheets of paper. This output can take different forms, like machine-readable QR codes, or it can be printed out in letters A to Z capitalized, A to Z lowercase, and 0 to 9. This means they can be read by a human being, just like Huckleberry Finn. At the time of the creation of the United States of America, the founding fathers of that new country, in their deep wisdom and distaste for tyranny, haunted by the memory of the absence of a free press in the countries from which they escaped, wrote into the basic law of that then young Federation of Free States an explicit and unambiguous freedom, the freedom of the press. This amendment was first because of its central importance to a free society. The First Amendment guarantees that all Americans have the power to exercise their right to publish and distribute anything they like without restriction or prior restraint. Quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. End quote. This single line forever precludes any law that restricts Bitcoin in any way. In 1995, the U.S. government had on the statute books laws that restrict the export of encryption software products from America without a license. These goods are classified as munitions. The first versions of the breakthrough public key encryption software, Pretty Good Privacy, or PGP, written by Philip Zimmerman, had already escaped the U.S. via bulletin board systems from the moment it was first distributed, but all copies of PGP outside of the United States were illegal. In order to fix the problem of all copies of PGP outside of America being encumbered by this perception, an ingenious plan was put into motion, using the First Amendment as the means of making it happen legally. The source code for PGP was printed out. It's as simple as that. Once the source code for PGP was printed in book form, it instantly, and more importantly, unambiguously, fell under the protection of the First Amendment. As a binary, the U.S. government ridiculously tries to assert that immaterial software is a device and not text. Software, or binaries, is text that can be run on devices. Clearly, the idea that software is a device is patently absurd, but rather than waste money arguing this point in court, printing out PGP removed all doubt that a First Amendment act was taking place. The printed source code was shipped to another country perfectly legally and beyond challenge, and then transferred to a machine by OCR, Optical Character Recognition, a software tool that can turn a printed page into a text file, removing the need for a person to manually type out a printed page, resulting in a PGP executable that was legally exported from the United States. The direct analogy to Bitcoin would be vividly clear to you now. PGP and Bitcoin are both, one, pieces of software that can be rendered as printed text on paper, two, software that generates unique blocks of human-readable text, and three, designed to generate text that is 100% covered by the First Amendment. The purpose of PGP is to absolutely verify the identity of a sender of a message and ensure that that message was not read or changed in transit. The purpose of Bitcoin is to absolutely verify the owner of a cryptographic key, which is a block of text, that can unlock a ledger entry in the global Bitcoin network. Both of these pieces of software are messaging systems and services that absolutely fall under the First Amendment in every aspect, from the source code used to generate the software clients that do the message signing to the text the compiled clients generate, send, receive, and process. Bitcoin is text. Bitcoin is speech. It cannot be regulated in a free country like the USA with guaranteed inalienable rights and a First Amendment that explicitly excludes the act of publishing from government oversight. Bitcoin and PGP generate messages that are initiated by their users. Each of the messages that are generated by these two pieces of software are unique. The only bodies of law that could possibly be invoked regarding their output and source code are copyright and patent law, respectively. The Bitcoin source code is not copyrighted, and the core idea of it is not patented. And in any case, none of this has anything to do with the nature of Bitcoin messages or your right to publish. Typewriters can include patented methods in their construction, but those patents have no bearing on your First Amendment right to publish what you create with patented tools. Copyright gives the generator of these texts privileges under the law imposing fines on someone copying your message without your permission. But copyright law has nothing to do with exporting, regulating, or imposing a tax on the messages themselves. And of course, forbidding the copying of your Bitcoin payment message rather negates the purpose of using Bitcoin. Taking all of this into account, if any legislator, regulator, three or six letter U.S. agency or other bureaucrat dares to try and regulate Bitcoin, they will be on a hiding to nothing. A legal challenge will be mounted and will have to be mounted because if a state can legislate against a single piece of software that generates messages, a legal precedent will be created allowing the U.S. government to regulate all software no matter what it does. Bitcoin's operation is fundamentally no different to what all email, text messaging, and internet-connected software does: relay messages. The only difference is in the software that tracks how the messages of the sender and recipient relate to each other. Email is no different to Bitcoin, save for the fact that a record of the sender and recipient and content of your email is not stored in a public ledger one against the other. We know it's stored in a private database, but that's another story. Wink, wink. Here is another example of case law proving that this reasoning is correct. Quote, while a graduate student at the University of California at Berkeley, Bernstein completed the development of an encryption equation, an algorithm he calls Snuffle. Bernstein wishes to publish A, the algorithm, B, a mathematical paper describing and explaining the algorithm, and C, the source code for a computer program that incorporates the algorithm. Bernstein also wishes to discuss these items at mathematical conferences, college classrooms, and other open public meetings. The Arms Export Control Act and the International Traffic in Arms Regulation, the ITAR regulatory scheme, required Bernstein to submit his ideas about cryptography to the government for review, to register as an arms dealer, and to apply for and obtain from the government a license to publish his ideas. Failure to do so would result in severe civil and criminal penalties. Bernstein believes this is a violation of his First Amendment rights and has sued the government. And won. End quote. In Bernstein versus U.S. Department of Justice, it was established that code is speech and is protected by the First Amendment. This absolutely and unambiguously applies to Bitcoin, with eerie parallels to KYC AML in Bitcoin. The constitutional ITAR requirements are exactly the same as asking Bitcoin traders to register as money transmitters and seek licenses before they can be paid to transmit text to the Bitcoin network for publication on the public ledger. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals found in Bernstein's favor and ruled that software was speech protected by the First Amendment and that the government's regulations preventing its publication were unconstitutional. It is clear to see that Bitcoin falls squarely into the category of protected speech. There is no way around any of this, and the U.S. courts must come to the same conclusion for Bitcoin. Bitcoin is protected speech, and the case law says so explicitly. The position that Bitcoin is money is fundamentally wrong, and systems like it have existed for many years without gaining the attention of any three-letter agencies. Take, for example, Farmville, the massively popular farm simulation game on Facebook. Quote, Farmville is available as an Adobe Flash application via the social networking website Facebook and Microsoft's MSN Games, and was available as an application or app for the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad for a brief period in 2010. The game is free to play. However, to progress quickly within the game, players are encouraged to spend farm cash in Farmville or farm bucks in Farmville 2, which are purchasable with real-world currency, or to, quote, get help from their friends. After its launch on Facebook in 2009, Farmville became the most popular game on the site and held that position for over 2 years. At its peak in March 2010, Farmville had 83.76 million monthly active users. Daily active, end quote, from Wikipedia's entry on Farmville. This hugely popular game is no different to Bitcoin in nature. Farm bucks exist in a closed system, just as Bitcoin does. The only difference is the size of the space where the messages are being sent, and in the case of farm bucks, the number of users and transactions the messages sent was large. Farmville had 83.7 million monthly active users, and not a single one was subjected to KYC AML to exchange fiat for farm bucks or farm cash. Why not? What happened to that money? Why weren't FinCEN or SEC all over that game as they are on ICOs? No one can explain this adequately. This example is very useful as a tool to pull back the curtain on the people who assert that Bitcoin is a money and is fundamentally different to a money kept in a game. All the rationales they use, mostly in the form of run-on sentences, to explain the difference are inaccurate and never address the fundamental processes. If they did, they would have no choice but to conclude that Bitcoin is no more subject to regulation than farm bucks or PGP are. Clearly, allowing legislation to touch Bitcoin means that any software of any kind will suddenly be liable to arbitrary and unconstitutional restriction. It will set a precedent that will be devastating to all software development in the USA. And software is the means by which everything is run, communicated, exchanged, and ordered in a modern society. In fact, it is impossible to run a modern society without software. All right, let's hit our sponsor real quick, and then we will jump right back into this section with a fun analogy between Bitcoin and Twitter. Twitter, for example, could find itself being regulated. It transmits messages that are no different in nature to the messages that Bitcoin transmits, the only difference being the publicly maintained ledger and application of the messages. In fact, Twitter could turn itself into a Bitcoin company quite easily by adding a few fields to its message JSON schema to include a Bitcoin address for each of its users, adding a page to its client, and running its own Bitcoin server pool. Would that extra text suddenly transform Twitter into a bank? Would that suddenly change the nature of each tweet that is sent on their network and cause them to be money transmitters? How is having a Bitcoin address integrated in your Twitter account different to making a promise by hand on Twitter to your followers or in a direct message? Essentially, Bitcoin allows you to make written contracts with people without knowing them or signing paper. The network and the software takes care of identifying and fulfilling the promise, all with cryptographically signed pieces of text. What the people calling for bit licenses are asserting is that because Bitcoin right now has a particular use, it should be exempted from the basic law of the United States of America. That is completely insane and will have unintended consequences that would be absolutely disastrous for the American economy, since almost everything today is mediated by or touches software. On the other hand, if Bitcoin is left to flourish and the market allowed to define the services and means of setting the value and resolving disputes, Bitcoin as an ecosystem will be extremely robust and widespread, just like the internet is today, after having grown for 20 years without any regulation or oversight from the state. Furthermore, as I have said previously, the country that does not enact Bitcoin legislation will become the starting and endpoints of all Bitcoin transactions globally by first mover advantage. All other jurisdictions will see Bitcoin passing through them untaxed, and there will be nothing they can do about it, as Bitcoin is an unassailable peer-to-peer network. We have seen a similar phenomenon with the legal position of encryption in France. SSL was regulated in France until Dominique Strauss-Kahn removed the restrictions. They knew that French e-commerce would take place inside Le Pays Rouge-Beef if it were not possible to secure French websites with SSL on demand without friction. American Bitcoin businesses, since the endpoints will be in their jurisdiction, will be taxed on their profits, and this will be a percentage of the trillions of global transactions made on the network for every conceivable and inconceivable purpose. The same is true for any other country. The United States looks set to cripple itself by enacting bit licenses and declaring by fiat that Bitcoin is a currency or a commodity or legal tender. As I describe above, Bitcoin is none of these things by nature, and the myriad number of applications it can be put to is only just being discovered. Our project Azteco is but one of them, with the potential to reach the billions of unbanked people in the world and provide them with an easy way to access internet e-commerce worldwide with a system that makes payment fraud impossible. The potential benefit to the unbanked and the websites that sell goods online and the jurisdictions where those websites operate is without precedent. Only a fool would do something that could harm the advent of this transformation or shun this new technology and the businesses building on it. No legislature would be able to keep up with the advances in software that are taking place. There are too many developers and efficient tools in the wild, all over the world, all with equal access to the market. The best the state can possibly hope for is to tax new businesses that use the new tools as they emerge and encourage entrepreneurs to incorporate in their jurisdictions. If America wants to drive away Bitcoin developers, exchanges, and new businesses, by all means, do so and take the consequences. There are many other places in the world where fast internet pipes have been laid and where the government is not so backward. Skype was founded in Estonia, not Silicon Valley, and this is for a reason. All the big Bitcoin exchanges are outside of the USA. There is no reason for that. No one wanting to start a Bitcoin business is planning to move to New York from anywhere because they know that their business models will immediately come under attack. For those of you who are frightened of a free market in Bitcoin, rest assured, all the laws that currently exist to do with fraud, theft, misrepresentation, and everything else continue to apply to all people and corporations who use Bitcoin. Bitcoin does not make laws or your personal or corporate obligations moot. When you deal with a company, you retain access to the law and recourse to it. When someone makes a promise to sell you goods with Bitcoin, that promise is not nullified because you are paying with Bitcoin. Good Bitcoin businesses will build dispute resolution systems the way that eBay and Amazon have, so that you never have to go to court to obtain justice if there is a problem. Online, reputation is everything, and bad reputations can destroy your credibility and customer base overnight. This is a far more powerful incentive to behave correctly and fulfill promises, which most people do by default in any case, rather than some arbitrary and absurd bit license. All the bit licenses in the world could not stop MT Gox from having a software problem. And no law can bring back the money lost, either directly or through the disruption that the event caused by the software error. Once again, entrepreneurs powered by the internet make life easier and better, not laws and regulations. Regulation does not make software correct. Developers do. I have one recommendation for anyone advocating that there should be a bit license. Don't waste everyone's time, money, and resources proposing this anti-American idea. The EFF has better things to do with their time than teach the PGP munitions case lesson all over again. If it goes to court, your side will lose, and as a consequence, America will lose its head start as all Bitcoin entrepreneurs flee the USA for environments that will allow them to innovate, grow, and prosper. What can the business people who want a Bit license forced on the software industry say? That they don't trust themselves? That's patently absurd. That they do not trust their competitors. If it's the case that their competitors are not good actors, then the good actors have a market advantage. And remember, a license cannot protect the public from fraud or provide any guarantee of any kind. It can only distort the market. What these BitLicense advocates actually want is a guaranteed market advantage. They are crony capitalists. They want to prevent the emergence of a golden BB entrepreneur that might destroy their business. They want to slow down and stifle innovation so that they can become the entrenched and unassailable gatekeepers. They want to bar new entrants to the market. It simply will not work, and it's un-American. The American legislature must let the American dream flourish and extend its power to Bitcoin, or it will be compelled to obey the law, and this has started to happen. Two judges in the USA have now found that Bitcoin is not money and have thrown out money laundering charges against two men. Quote, U.S. Magistrate Judge H.B. Scott ruled in a money laundering case in Buffalo, New York, that Bitcoin is more like a commodity and is not a form of currency, according to a local news report. He recommended the money laundering charge be dropped against the defendant since Bitcoin isn't money. In another money laundering case last year, Miami-Dade Circuit Judge Teresa Mary Pooler stated it is very clear, even to someone with limited knowledge in the area, that Bitcoin has a long way to go before it is the equivalent of money. End quote. Bitcoin is not money. KYC AML should not apply to it at all. The Hugh B. Scott ruling is highly significant because it directly contradicts the idea of the BitLicense. And lest there be any doubt, all of this, including legal remedies for breach of promise, applies to ICOs, which are also nothing more than text stored in a database. The fact that they are called initial coin offerings is irrelevant to the underlying processes, and it is not illegal to parrot the language and terms of finance, which are not trademarked or copyrighted. The Hollywood Stock Exchange wasn't deceptive because it called itself a, quote, stock exchange. Opponents of Bitcoin and ICOs have no good arguments, and the threadbare pretexts for regulation they're able to synthesize are as flimsy as fiat. If you like the content and feel so obliged to send some love via Bitcoin donations, you can do so at the address below. And he's got a QR code right below the article. So if you follow the link in the show notes and would like to donate because you enjoyed this article, I definitely recommend it. And I really like this discussion. I wish it was as simple as Budion lays it out. Like, I think it is unambiguous in the actual true sense. Like, if you look at it in some objective reality. But my problem with it is just that, you know, a judge has to believe it too. And the U.S. is very, I mean, I think we're losing the right to free speech anyway, particularly in publication. I mean, look at what's happened to Julian Assange. Like, not only is he being prosecuted over something that is absolutely, like, unquestionably the freedom of publication or the freedom of speech and the freedom of the press, but it's being done outside of the United States. Like, they attacked someone who wasn't even a U.S. citizen and was not in the United States, who is being extradited back to the U.S. over to be criminalized for a law that is protected by the U.S. Constitution. It's absolutely insane. And that's what's scary. I mean, he's right. Like, Budion is absolutely right. Like, this will destroy the U.S. And I think if something like this happens, like I'm trying to be as prepared as I can to leave the United States, because I think it would be I think it would spell economic death for the country, because the currency will not survive forever. It's the debts will have to be paid off, or they will have to be printed away. And regardless, in both of those situations, well, the debt won't be paid off. It will never be paid off. It will be printed away. A simple anybody who's looking at it, it's perfectly clear that that's what's going to happen, because the debt cannot be paid off. It's just not possible. And because of that, it has to be printed away. And when it does, if the United States is not allowed to use Bitcoin, if citizens, they will kill their citizens at the expense of keeping their perceived power, and all of their power will go with it. It'll be a disaster. And I think it's inevitable. It might not. It's a huge question in the air as to when it happens, but the trend is stupidly clear, and because it's an exponential problem, there's only so long that it can go on. And I think we're getting closer and closer to that point. But the conversation that it's really interesting that what Bitcoin really is promises with proof of identity. It's literally a set of promises on a public ledger that you can write to each other. And I find that really fascinating. But it kind of brings into question the whole idea of a stock market and stuff in general, is that, well, no, you actually have physical stock. You actually have a physical, because I was thinking, like, all of those are messages, essentially, but they're contractual agreements, and they're able to call a security or a stock, anything like that, in the financial world. Technically, that's all text. That's all a promise. But what's funny about ICOs is that I think it makes sense that the ICOs should not be considered securities. Just with the argument laid out here in this argument, or in this article, is that they are there's no fiduciary duty. Like, they're just nonsense tokens. Like none of they've not even made any promises involved in this. Like, it should absolutely not be considered a stock or a security. That doesn't make it not like a shitcoin at all. It just means that because there's no fiduciary duty, there's absolutely nothing that suggests that it has some fiduciary value. Like, it's just a pointless token for whatever they hope their network will be used for. So I find this a really interesting discussion, and I would hope that you could make this thing stand up in court. But I think as Bitcoin gets more and more used by money, the actual reality of it will be obscured away. People just won't understand. And I would love to see someone, and I can't believe it's really kind of interesting that this hasn't happened yet, because to defend the idea that Bitcoin is speech, because I think he's right. I think he's got a really strong argument and case law to make that stance. But I don't know. No, nobody has basically stood up to it yet. Everybody's just kind of been like getting down and, getting down on their knees and accepting whatever it is that FinCEN or like, none of the exchanges have stood up against this. None of the no, nobody has. Everybody's just kind of bowed to whatever it is that the regulatory agencies have wanted to do. I don't think I know of anybody who has challenged yet, particularly on that point, which I think is a brilliant point, that this is just not only is it messages, but nobody even owns the network. Like, there's no network owners. There's no central institution. It is literally a standardized means of creating a promise on a public ledger, just in a public place, that has a strict set of rules to as far as like people who freely join the network. And I would love to see somebody make this defense. This would be amazing. Maybe we'll get some sort of Bitcoin whale or huge Bitcoin person who's been in it for a long time and gets hit. Like, because I think we only have any way to see like the growth or trend of America is definitely toward vastly more government control, particularly with KYC, AML, and FinCEN regulations. Like, the overreach of the United States government into areas that they absolutely have no precedent or business whatsoever in either regulating or making any laws about is ridiculous. Like the interpretation of the Constitution is almost hilarious. If you read the Constitution, like on its face, like what does this mean? What is the spirit of this law? And then look at what we have today. Just ignore all the changes and all the everything that has happened. It's absolutely insane to think that anyone could believe for a second. Like if you think that the Constitution is outdated and shouldn't be followed, that is one thing. But it is absolutely absurd to think that anything about the United States government in its current form is constitutional. Like there's unconstitutional everywhere. Like the whole thing is a hilarious parody of what the Constitution was trying to prevent. So I would say that it's really unfortunate that I honestly don't think this would hold up in court. Somebody would have to put up a very good fight and they'd have to get a very intelligent judge, which I think is kind of a shot in the dark. But I think this is absolutely true. I think he lays out the argument right, and I think he is right. I think this is legit. That, I mean, if you look at the actual process of what's going on, this is text. It's just text. I could just as easily write out and modify text on a piece of paper that would transfer my Bitcoin to you or your Bitcoin to me or anything like that. We could print this out. We could exchange it. I could exchange it and just give you a private key and pass it to you privately or on a folded up piece of paper, and then you could undo it and you would have access. You could just take that Bitcoin. I could have transferred my ownership just by handing you over the keys. I don't know. It's a really fascinating discussion. I would really like to see someone take a stand on this, but I have to admit I'm a bit of a pessimist in that regard right now. The direction of the U.S. just looks abysmal as far as, like, and you know, maybe it's just a cultural thing that, I don't know, I go back and forth sometimes as to whether or not there's going to be a reaction to this that is just so distrusting of the government and the mainstream, essentially, that we push back in the opposite direction. But right now, the culture, and there's a great, I think it's Dave Smith that says all the time that that politics is downstream from culture, and the culture shift right now is totalitarianism. It's promoting and being totally okay with censorship as long as you're censoring the people that I don't agree with. And I think the culture has just lost any sense of what liberty is. I don't think the average person could even come close to defining what freedom or liberty is. Like, there are no principles backing that. It's just a word that makes them feel happy because they're free. They think, you know, universal health care or universal income is a part of freedom. There's no principle. There's no objectivity. There's no, like, let's deduce and figure out what it means for me to have the right to something that I don't, or I either would or like I would have to take from you. Like, there's just no logical foundation for defining what freedom or liberty is whatsoever. If you talk with the average person, they just wouldn't have the slightest clue. Just not at all. And I think that's reflected in our judicial and legal system, without a doubt. And I don't have a whole lot of faith in that institution to do the obviously correct and obviously objective truth to actually apply the law based on what reality is versus what their narrative and what they think ought to be. So hopefully my pessimism is misplaced, but I don't have much faith. But this was a really great article, and I wish this argument was put out more. I think this is a really important article, actually, by Beudian, and a huge thank you to Beudian for writing this thing, because it really is just you can't argue with this. Like, nothing in this is untrue. And it's hilarious, like that comparison to Farmbucks or Farm Cash with Farmville. It's like, how did Like, you know, why didn't they have to do AML, KYC? Like that people were exchanging, like really, literally, why? I don't understand. What's the difference? Like, the only difference is one is centralized versus decentralized, which would actually suggest that because it's quote unquote centralized, because it's a security for farm bucks, like they're actually making a promise that said, we'll give you back fiat, we'll give you back this exact amount, or this is worth this exact amount, excuse me, based on like the utility of what's going on in Farmville or something. That arguably there's a better argument for doing KYC AML, for applying a money transmission license to farm bucks, than there is Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin doesn't even have an institution that's making any promises. You're making promises individually with each other, just using a basic protocol for standardizing it. It's like a protocol for, it's just a protocol for a contractual agreement, as opposed to a protocol for like a phone conversation or shaking someone's hands and introducing yourself. Like, those are basic protocols for how we interact and introduce each other. Bitcoin is a basic and far more strict and specific protocol for how to make a promise. And that's just like, so I think farm bucks are actually even though obviously they did not have to have KYC AML and or get a money transmitter's license or anything like that, because obviously it would be stupidly absurd to suggest that they have to do that because of a game token. But I think it applies even stronger to Bitcoin than it did to Farm Bucks or Farm Cash. That the argument is that it shouldn't at all. But because people think of it as a financial asset, because it's so obscure and people don't have such, I think it's just such a mountain of ignorance about Bitcoin. And of course, of this argument, they don't realize that that's all Bitcoin is. It's just text. It's just messages online. That obviously right now we are getting the shite end of the stick, and not only are we not getting what should be the actual laws that apply, we're getting like a ridiculous draconian version of it that will absolutely stifle innovation and any kind of productive economy in the U.S. And in my consideration, if it continues in the trend that it's going and gets worse or more strict, that in 30 years, the U.S. market, if it gets more strict, doesn't get undone, and there is no route around it, that the U.S. economy will be one of the weakest in the modern world, because there's going to be such an explosion of wealth and commerce that the U.S. would basically be excluding themselves from. I think it would be as if they kicked Silicon Valley out of the country in the 90s, and what would we see today? What would the world look like, and what would the American economy versus the Chinese or, you know, some European economy be if Silicon Valley was somewhere else? What is it? 7 out of the top 10 largest companies in the world are tech companies. The U.S. would have lost its position without a doubt. And I think it will happen if they don't take the same approach to Bitcoin that they took with the internet. I think that's the U.S.'s only hope, essentially. Okay. Don't forget to drop some massive applause on this article. Again, this is by Beudion, which you can find, who you can find on Medium and Twitter, and tons of work by Beudion out there. This just really, really fun to read and dig into. Definitely, definitely should be following Beudion. And also, I think we've covered two articles by Beudion in the past, maybe three. I can't remember, but we did that one very recently on Bitcoin and software reliability. And I will be sure to link to that one in the show notes as well, so you can hear that one, because it's also a really, really good one. But with that, don't forget to drop some applause on this article. This is a Hacker Noon publication, published on Hacker Noon's Medium publication. I don't even know if I said that. I'm sorry if I forgot to. Hacker Noon is always picking up a lot of great stuff. So it's good to check them out as well and follow both of them on Twitter and of course, Medium as well. So with that, let's go ahead and close this episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. I believe I will have enough time to get another episode out tomorrow. I've had a couple of weeks here where I've only gotten four episodes out, but I think I'm going to be able to squeeze one out tomorrow as well. And I think I finally have something to announce, but I'll probably hold it off until Monday and let a couple of people look at it. So keep an ear out for that. I don't want to release it before it's really ready or before it makes any sense. I want somebody who has not been staring at it as long as I have to give it a look. So keep an eye out for that. It'll be something on cryptoeconomy.life. So don't forget to go check out the website and all the stuff going on over there because we're going to have some big changes coming very soon. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. I am The Crypto Economy on Twitter. Don't forget to follow me up there. Again, check out the website at cryptoeconomy.life. And I'll catch you all tomorrow. Subscribe to the show. Share it out with everybody. Oh, yeah, support the show. This is a listener supported show, and it's massively, massively appreciated. Thank you, everybody who has donated in the past and continues to do so. You can become a supporting listener at anchor.fm. And don't forget, I've got a Q&A to the supporting listener thing. You can donate anything. It's just a simple monthly thing. So you can do like $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever it is. If you are getting value out of that, out of this show, that would be a wonderful, wonderful help to have a little bit of stable income coming from this and be able to expect it. Also, I've got the Q&A happening. Oh, crap. When was it? I think it was next Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Let me bring up my calendar. Ask Guy, the first episode on June 19th, 2019 at 9 a.m. So I'm going to record my Q&A then. I don't think it will be live because I want to give it a test run before I subject myself to that. But I will be doing that on that day and probably releasing it as an episode. So if you have any questions, or want to throw me a comment or something like that, you can use voice messages on anchor.fm, or you can shoot me an email at thecryptoeconomy@pm.me or protonmail.com. They're both the same. It's just a shortcut with the pm.me. All right, guys. Thanks again. Share it out with all your friends in the Bitcoin and crypto economy space. This is the Crypto Economy Podcast. I am your host, Guy Swan, signing out. Until next time, take it easy, guys.